Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navaditamastu Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
So continuing with 64 arts. 45. Okay, the art of healing or cleansing a person with perfumes. 6, the art of combing the hair. Yeah. So in all these things, there's some way of application that makes it unique or special. Right? That's the whole point of an art. An art means that how you apply it. Because the science is there, but because you know the science doesn't necessarily mean you know the application. Right? So that's why there's some fineness, some technical points to understand on how you do. Right? So that basic knowledge. They're called arts and sciences, this whole thing. Prabhupada calls them the 64 arts and sciences. Because it means your science means within the material. It means there's some rules and everything, how it works. Then you have the art on how you do it. Like if I say you have water and you put it in a cup and you splash it on the ground. That's the science. But the art is how you hold the cup, how you put your hand on it, how you flick it so that you actually get the water to spread out in a... Yeah? You got, so it's it. So. And if you go like all over India, you see... Nowadays you see it more in the way of in front of shops and that are on the roadside. So they're trying to keep the dust down. That's the whole point of sprinkling water like that, is that you keep the dust. Either you're sprinkling and then going to sweep, or you're sprinkling and then you're just going to leave it like that. So then if it's in the house, you know, then you would sweep it. If it's outside, then they generally tend to not. Right? 47, the art of talking with letters and fingers. Right? So how to use the different things, these signs, how to... I can't remember what it is. If it's Tamil literature or something, then there was somehow or another at some program there was a prince and a princess, you know, amongst all the Kshatriyas, but they never met or anything, but they saw each other. And so as she left, and she used this with the signs and fingers, and so that he could understand what dynasty she was from. Because once you know that, then you know where to find them. But otherwise, you don't know. So she gave something. I think it was about, you know, she did it heal and then the lightning. And then that was, then you could understand which dynasty that was. Right, you know. But at the same time, it has to be in such a way that others don't notice it, right? Of course, somehow or another, the older ladies always notice. Right? The younger ladies may or may not, because they're already distracted by their own thing. The old ladies don't have anything to be distracted by, so they notice everything that the younger ladies are doing. So you have all that. So you have to watch out. 48, art of fabricating barbarous or foreign sophistry. Right, so your from what I understand, there seems to be different ways you can use this word sophistry. I always took it as the cultural elements, but I think it has something else that is there that is more to consider. Do we have something in sophistry? Okay, I'm telling you. The art of knowing provincial dialects. So then, that will be your provincial dialects. It doesn't come up in here. I think it comes up in Province one. Provincial dialects. So you have the provincial dialects. So out in the provinces, they have these their own unique. It's either a dialect of the language itself. What did you get?
Nothing.
A sophistry. It's too sophisticated a word for this.
It's just one word for one word.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't remember. Because I was using it one way, but there's another way to use it also.
Yeah, it can be.
From what I understood, it is all this barbarous sophistry, like eating with forks and knives and spoons, and you know, all this stuff where you put all the cup. And you know, it seems to be very sophisticated, but it's a sophistication of, you know, barbarous purposes. You know, like we're saying, like the fort, the original fort just had two tines. But it was a very good weapon. So when people would have a little too much to drink, then it would get really wild. So then I think they put in three tines, because two tines you could kill somebody. Three tines you can't drive it deep enough to kill them. But safe is four. Yeah. So now the modern ones are four tines, so then the thing's very small. Before, the forks were very big and the tines were very long. You know, I think they still use the original fork when they do meat carving. You know, you have the knife and you have the thing that you poke with and then you cut. So that's what that's the original fork. You know, so it's, you know, you can see it's quite dangerous. Therefore, it's only, you know, the senior person in the assembly gets to use it, because before it was that kind of fork only Henry could use, because it was seen too dangerous for everyone else. You know, so then, you know, like that. So the art of provincial dialect, so basically that would include all, you know, means learning of English, you know, French, German, all these kind of things. These are provincial dialects, because they're out in the province.
You know them?
Huh? No, I'm saying these are the arts. So that was when, remember, Yudhishthira Maharaj and Vidura were talking in Malecha language. No one else understood, because they knew this art of provincial dialect. It could have been, it said, the language of the Malechas, so very well could have been English. You know? Yeah, or anyone of those, you know, could have been. The art of not, so there, and also you have the element just within your own country that there's so many, just like these are arts, so these are for fun or for just interacting. Let's say, like in England, I think there's over 200 dialects, so you can tell exactly where someone's from by the dialect. So then, if you know these various dialects, one, you can talk to these people, or you can have fun talking to your friends in these dialects, because generally, you would always talk in one that you're not from, right? If you're from the north, where they have these real rough ones, then you'd for fun talk in these sophisticated ones. And if you're from the south, then you would talk in the northern ones for fun. Like, you know, it's also considered that when you go out on a picnic, that when you're out in a picnic out in the forest, you'll always talk in provincial dialects. You know? You'll always talk in, you know, the rougher language. It's all just for fun. You know? So that's how you get to use these things, and so you don't use them in your standard life. You know, in your standard life, you'll talk nicely. And does that make sense? It's just like, or in what do you call it? Wherever there's Creole spoken.
Creole, Mauritius.
Yeah, Mauritius. Then, if it's formal, or if it's with the women, you speak French. But if it's just the men, or you're on the street, you speak Creole. You know, so then you get that. You know, you get to have fun like that. And then in proper things, then you do everything right. You know, so then. So that's the 50. Art of knowing prediction by heavenly voice, or knowing preparation of toy carts by flowers. Right? And so somehow or another, the same science does both. You can predict things, and you can also, you know, so how that works. And so a few of these, then some of the mystical ones, I don't know, but otherwise I've met people who say, except for one or two of these, their mother knew all of these. Like that. It was just standard. Previously, all the cultured women knew these. These were just, it was standard. It wasn't, you know, some more, some less. So the more cultured, you know, then the more they would know. 51, the art of mechanics. Right? You know, just how things mechanically work. So chariots, things, that's why it's an art. You know, Shudras know mechanics. So it's an art. So in other words, those who, their occupation are not these. These are arts. If these are your occupation, then that's an artist. Does that make sense? Just like the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas know music, singing, dancing, theatricals, painting, but it's as hobbies. You know, if it's your occupation, then that's an artist. That's the difference. Okay, 52, the art of the use of amulets, like how they're prepared, how, you know, what you would use for what. The art of conversation, right? So that's a very good one. You can actually sit and talk with people and not, they're not getting up and running away, they're not calling 911, you know, things like that, or they actually have one. The art of composing verse mentally, right? Because that means the science is all these things go together, but how to do that in the mind. So you see as many of the acharyas, they could do this, right? Because most people sit there and write and then make adjustments and then make the final. But we see, like with Madhvacharya, he would just say it and then the person would write it. Right? Or Jiva Goswami, I mean, Vyasadeva also was just speaking it. Ganesh was writing. Or Jiva Goswami, he would write page one, right? And then write page three. I mean, write means verse one, then verse three, then turn it over, then verse two and verse four. You know, whatever it was. Yeah, or whatever it is, however many verses could go on a page, you can't, it has to dry. So then you can't write the next page, you have to go ahead. So he'd already worked out how many verses go, everything like that. So that's, therefore, Prabhupada makes the comment of, you know, the greatest scholar and, you know, in this contemporary time means going back hundreds of years. We're not. You know, others don't do this, right? Like that. Okay, the art of designing a literary work or a medical remedy. So it appears that how you put the work together and the medical remedy, how, because the remedy means you're going to deal with this and this aspect, you're going to bring this out, does that make sense? Because you're dealing with the root, but you have to get at the root, and you can't deal from all angles from the root, so you decide which one you'll deal with first. Then once that's accomplished, then you deal with the next, then the next, then the next. So it's also the same with writing a literary work. It's like, what it is that you want to bring out first? What should the audience catch first? Then you slowly bring it until you get to the point that you want. So it's basically the same thing. So to be a natural doctor or a writer can be very the same process. 56, art of practicing is a builder of shrines called after him. Right, so then how to build a temple, how to do these things. You know, what would be the way you do the architecture, all these different elements. You know, how you would come up with the ideas. 57, the art of using lexography and meters. Right, so lexography is as dictionaries and all that. So how to put them together, because the meter requires words of certain length or certain endings. Or certain alliterations, right? Certain same syllables. So the lexography can also put those things together. So you can use the two together. Yeah. So you know how to use, because people doing meters would look it up. Excuse me. The art of concealment of claws. So how it means it's like with sleight of hand, but now you're using cloth. You know how to dress and do things. The art of knowing specific gambling. Right? It means specifically how it works. Like it was saying, the arts of it. If you do this, then you'll end up with this result. So it's an art. So that's why professional gamblers, they know the art. So it's not technically gambling for them. You know, the gambling is if somebody figures it out. But for them, it's all sleight of hand and everything else. And they know exactly how it's going to work. In other words, they have dice in their hand that's going to come out in a certain role. Then they have other dice, which everybody knows is there. When you go to put them in the cup or whatever it is you use to shake before you throw them, then the thing is you have to be able to switch them. So they don't know. So your gambling is whether anyone will catch the sleight of hand. But as far as you knowing what results you get, you know exactly what you get. Does that make sense? So like that, then you have, or you have two sets. One that will have even, one will have odd. You know? And so what, you see the bets, and then you calculate, okay, where's the house going to make the maximum money? You know, and then you put that one into the thing. You know, so they have these, there's that in that the cheating ones. But there's also the ones where you can take regular dice, and how you hold them and how you throw them, you know exactly what number they get. So in any case, whether you're doing it more above board or whether you're not, it's still, these are the things. The art of playing with dice or magnets. Right? So how to, you know, games with them and how to deal. So that means games that use those, or just magnets, how, you know. Like Fuki Mishai has this whole thing. They're perfectly round balls as magnets, but they still have a positive and negative. And so you can put them together into all these shapes and stuff like that. Seen those?
We have.
Yeah, yeah. So he makes it, you know, every time you come in, you know, you come in and it's a square. You come in next time, it's an octagonal thing, you know. And everything's perfect, you know. You really have to know what you're doing to be able to do that. Because the problem is this positive and negative. Yeah. So you could probably throw in here, you know, playing with a Rubik's Cube or something. Art of using children's toys. So how to use them to actually interest the child. Because it's not just there's a toy there, you have to get the child interested in it. You know, so it's how you bring it out, how you make the noise with the face. You know, I mean, there's a whole, it's a process. Art of enforcing discipline. So how that's done. How you make discipline work. Because it's not just punishing doesn't necessarily affect discipline. Affecting discipline is a specific thing. So punishment is supposed to generate discipline. So that's the real thing you deal with. So you don't have to get into strong anything unless the natural forms of discipline aren't working. Does that make sense? So it's an art, how you discipline. Like, means it's just like, how you say, when you don't talk, how long you don't talk, whether you respond at all, or you like this. These are all in the, how you say, art of enforcing discipline, the subtle science. The art of gaining victory, right? So that's then, one you put it in check, but then the other is how you win on top of this. So you put those two together, then you have something strong. The art of awakening the master with music at dawn. Right. Art of concealment of claws. This is somehow another slightly. I think it also makes how to dress up so people can't recognize you. You know, like Krishna could dress up, or the kings could dress up, and they would go out with their ministers, and people would just think they're ordinary people. So they could move around and, you know, go here and there and see what's happening. Because you have spies, you know, to tell things, but you still have to check yourself. You can't leave it just up. In other words, the spies are going, that's your regular thing, but now and again you have to go and check that what the spies are saying is actually true. And if it is, then the spy is good. If it's not, you have to change your spies. Right? Yeah, so it's just the standard stuff. Or if you're a celebrity, how to go out and, you know, go someplace without people noticing who you are and stuff like that.
When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his crowd came to get the Shankazi, a lot of the people, they mingled with the crowd, they covered up their beards.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, just so that they can not be. Yeah, so these are the sciences, the arts and sciences. So, okay. Jiva Goswami. Okay, so that was based on. The divine sportive potency fills the hearts of his paraphernalia with appropriate spiritual sentiments and conformity with the will of Krishna. Right? So then these are all aspects of which adds to what's going on. In other words, the mood is there, but how will it be expressed? What situation? So the 64 are. So Radharani is master at all 64. Now, various gopis are master at different ones, expert at different ones, and knowledgeable at different ones. So it makes sense, but Radharani is master in all these. So she teaches them to everybody and can do them all perfectly. You know, and Krishna will also be. So then there's a natural match there. Jiva Goswami points points further points. Jiva Goswami points further points out. Okay, Jiva Goswami probably further points out, right, the exclusive quality of such intimate exchanges. The word eva in the phrase goloka, eva, indicates that such pastimes are not found elsewhere at all. You just don't see it. You never hear of the Supreme Lord coming in to where his consorts are and then they don't talk to him. That only happens in this element in Golok. Plus, you often say, as you retain Golok as the whole of the planet, just all five rasas being manifest, you don't see it any in Vaikuntha. There they only deal with two. Lakshmi is there, but you know he has no parents. He's God. How could he have parents? Right? You know, so you just don't have. Who's going to be his friend? He's God. Your servants. So Lakshmi, as his consort, is still his servant, but that will be right wing. Right? You just don't see the left wing. That's why in that Chaitanya Leela, then it's you have the element where the servants of Lakshmi come out. Because Jagannath and Gundicha, and they're coming, and it's a whole fight coming out. And then they you know, it's said that this has not been seen before, because in Vaikuntha this never happens. Right? You could say it doesn't need to happen in Vaikuntha because everything's formal. But he's left Vaikuntha and gone to Braj. So that means other girls. So therefore you might see this side of Lakshmi, but only in this situation, no other situation. And then she goes back and then locks the doors. So then only when he displays great opulence, then she agrees and lets him back in. Like that. So you just don't see it. So even here, as we see, is that pastime's going on only because it's connected to Sweta Dweep, which is still in Goloka. And it has that connection with Braj. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it stands. So you don't see it in Vaikuntha. And even though the forms of certain aspects you may see in the material world, you don't have actually the moods. So you don't really see it here. Swakiya rasa versus parakiya rasa. The verse translation above is by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. An alternative reading based on Jiva Goswami's commentaries as follows. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, though regarding all the inhabitants as his very self, resides in Goloka exclusively with the young gopis, who are embodiments of Madhurya Rasa. He accepts them as his wives, Nija Rupa Taya, while they respond to his conjugal affection reciprocally. The main distinction between these two translations is the term Nija Rupa Taya, which Jiva Goswami takes to support the Swakiya nature of the Supreme Couple's relationship. Now, the reason he's expressing the Swakiya is because he had disciples that were... the other day we had the question about, isn't it immoral, Swakiya? So how can Krishna, being the Supreme Absolute, be manifesting pastimes that would technically be taken as immoral? So to explain that, then you go back into Tattva and just explain how the Lord and his energy is not different. And so they are eternally together. It's just that for taste, then they make the appearance as if they're not. So it's like a lila. Then those personalities are satisfied. Right? So in other words, you're dealing with persons who may not be able to catch. Because now you have the greatest scholar who's going to be attracted generally.
Scholars.
Scholars tend to be a bit, you know, cut and dry by the rules. So this becomes very hard for them to appreciate. So therefore he, you know, would describe it this way. Some will say, no, he professed Swakiya Rasa. Not at all. He's just explaining Parakiya Rasa from the angle of Tattva, so therefore it just becomes, it is rule. Then people are happy. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It means we don't do that?
Generally not. We don't have to. If it comes up, then yes, that's the same. We use the same technique.
Interesting that only his disciples were not happy with that. About
you have here and there. I met one devotee couple in one time, Indian. You know, from traditional backgrounds, and the husband was, you know, ISKCON worshiping Radha Krishna, but the wife, forget it, she's worshiping Ram. She's not, it had nothing to do with Krishna. He's off dancing with, you know, other people's wives. So it's like she's not worshiping him. You know, but Ram, he's, you know, does everything properly according to the rules like that. So you do get it now and again. But, you know, you hear of it, but here I actually met. I actually saw the conversation. You know, if something says, you know, because I came and can you explain to her this? And then she just says, no, it's like this. You know, so she wasn't about to listen. So. Okay. Jiva Goswami takes the support of the Swakiya nature of the Supreme Couple. It's a relationship. In Goloka, he accepts them as his own wives, Nita Rupa Taya, though during his pastimes on earth, he accepts them as other persons' wives, because it is impossible that they are other persons' wives, since they are the supreme Lakshmis, or consorts of the Lord, right? So now he's going into Tattva, you understand? So in Goloka, they don't have husbands, but the mood is that they do. Right? Here you manifest, because if you don't manifest them, how will people appreciate and understand that's what's going on? Right, and because the residents of Goloka don't see any difference between the pastimes there and here, means we make the distinction; they don't. You know, so therefore, because they have husbands here, naturally they must have husbands there. It's the same pastime, but the husbands are only manifest here. There, they're not manifest. Does that make sense? So then you can say that there they don't have. So then their only interaction is only with Krishna. Right? In order to increase the sense of longing in his pastimes on earth, there is an appearance of their being others' wives by covering the pastime of their actually being wives alone. This occurs through his own Maya. During the pastimes on earth, he resides with them, while treating them as others' wives, whereas in Goloka, the place of his unmanifest pastime. Because once they were, one of them was going around and trying to find the nest, and it couldn't find it because it was looking at a column, but it was actually the next column. Mm-hmm. And then it was looking around, couldn't find it. I was standing in it, and I pointed at it on the column. Immediately, just came over. these guys are smart. So now I was trying to figure out what happened. Where'd it go? You know, because there was a gap there. Where is it? This occurs though his own. Okay, during the pastimes on earth, he resides with them while treating them as others' wives. Whereas in Goloka, the place of his unmanifest pastimes, he lives with them on as his own consorts. This distinguishes his behavior in Goloka from that during his earthly pastimes. Digdarshan Utika 537. This passage is famous within the Gaudiya Vaishnava canon for sparking controversy amongst immature critics, right? Because they don't understand what's happening here. Some parties attempt to use the statement to foment false discord between Vaishnava acharyas, claiming that Jiva Goswami stands in opposition to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his view that only Swakiya Rasa exists in Braja. Although the grossly misinformed and offensive nature of this charge might tempt one to ignore it, the manner in which it was addressed by our preceptors is highly instructive. Their statements provide valuable lessons on dealing with different types of materially conditioned opponents, be they mundane, moralists, or sahajiya, Srila Prabhupada states. According to another sahajiya accusation, according to another, so I always think of remember, says, you know, I say, let us say, you know, they ask Prabhupada, what do you think of Vivekananda? You know, we don't think about him. What about Ramakrishna? He's another rascal. So according to another accusation, right? Yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami did not approve of the principles of the Parakiya Rasa of Braja Dhamma, because now here's the whole point. What does you could say Jiva Goswami, you know, singularly do? in his writings. He establishes, you know, with the finest detail, you know, in logic beyond anybody's capacity to defeat, what pure devotional service is. You know, what is the proper, you know, application of pure Vaishnava practice, you know, both philosophically and in application. So that means it doesn't leave, you know, even a nanometer for a sahajiya to establish themselves. So therefore, sahajis will go after him, because then they will say, oh, he's formal, he doesn't know the higher things, so they can get rid of him, and then you don't have to worry about all the rules. Srila Jiva Goswami did not approve of the principles of Parakya Rasa of Brajadam, and therefore supported Swakya Rasa, showing that Radha and Krishna are eternally married. Actually, when Jiva Goswami was alive, some of his followers disliked the Parakya Rasa of the gopis. Therefore, Srila Jiva Goswami, for their spiritual benefit, supported Swakya Rasa, for he could understand that Sahajiyas would otherwise exploit the Parakya Rasa, as they are actually doing at the present time. Unfortunately, in Vrindavan and Navadvip, it has become fashionable among sahajiyas in their debauchery to find an unmarried sexual partner to live with, to execute so-called devotional service in Parakya Rasa. Foreseeing this, Srila Jiva Goswami supported Swakya Rasa, and later all the Vaishnava Acharyas also approved of it. Srila Jiva Goswami was never opposed to the transcendental Parakya Rasa, nor has any other Vaishnava disapproved of it. C.C. Adi Lila 1085. Right, so here's then Prabhupada's bringing out this other point, is that if you bring out the Swakya that is supposed to be, then you don't have. So in other words, they are his internal potency, so they are his consorts. So therefore, how can you live with someone unmarried and then say, yes, we're doing the Swakya above like they're doing in the spiritual world? You can't, because technically then it's actually would be the person you are legally connected with, because the Lord is connected with his internal potency. So therefore, if the sahaji wants to live with his own wife, fine, but don't, you know, but don't call it, you know, then they want to call it park, whatever it is, they can do whatever they like. But this is then in the name of, then they try to do these things. So this is not approved. So the acharyas also take that stand when they're dealing with sahajis. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary to this verse, writes perhaps his lengthiest purport of the whole Brahma Samhita. Space considerations prevent us from reprinting his essay in full, yet it's essential reading for anyone desiring greater appreciation for the absolute purity of Krishna Lila. Rather than focus on such lofty theological considerations as Krishna's relationship with the gopis, the excerpts below resolve around cultivating the proper attitude for entering into such discussions in the first place. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta establishes that there can be no contradiction amongst acharyas in the parampara. Like sometimes devotees bring this up. Prabhupada is saying this, Jiva is saying that, Baladev is this, you know, as we're saying this whole, you know, the fall of the Jiva thing, and then the first thing you do is pit the acharyas against each other, right? It's just like a little kid. You know, an immature child, when they ask one parent, don't get what they want, then they go and ask the other and say, the other one said this, and you see, in other words, you pit them against each other, and then like that. So this is immature in devotional service. Right? The devotional activity is characterized by illicit amor, as practiced by worldly-minded conditioned souls, are forbidden mundane impiety. The heart of our apostle, Sripad Jiva Goswami, was very much moved by such practices and induced him to give us his conclusive statements on the subject. It is the duty of a pure Vaishnava to accept the real spirit of his statements. It is a great offense to disrespect the Acharya and to seek to establish a different doctrine in opposition to him. So the point is the Acharyas will never be making a different point. They may be using a different angle to bring out, that's called vichar, but they'll never make a different point. You know, because otherwise it's not an uncommon. You know, it's not that common, because how many devotees are reading such a wide variety of literature? But amongst those who do, then they come out, well, this one says this one says that, or even amongst Prabhupada himself. Here he's saying this point, and then here he's saying that point, they're contradictory. But that means this, the lack of maturity, because you're supposed to be able to find how they fit together. So in other words, what's the position where they both fit? That's the thing. Then you can do that. That's the proper way of dealing. Because there is no such thing as contradiction amongst the charts. They're from the same place. Why will they have a difference? Right? There are some who, being unable to understand the drift of his statements, give meanings of their own invention and indulge in useless controversies. In fact, Sri Padjiva Goswami has come to the true conclusion, and at the same time, the finding of the opposing party is also inconceivably true. It is the vain empirical wranglings about wedded wifehood and concubinage which is false and full of specious verbosity. Verbosity, I get. Spacious, fusion, spacious. I know it has a specific meaning, but I haven't seen it for a while.
Suspect.
Okay, so suspect verbosity means lots of fancy, lots of talk. He who goes through the commentaries of Sripad Jiva Goswami and those of the opposing party with an impartial judgment cannot maintain his attitude of protest engendered by any real doubt. Because you'll see as he's answering the point and he's addressing what they're saying also. In other words, the parakeya aspect is there, but it's based on the principle of his relationship, means of tattva between the Lord and his energies. You know, probably gives the example. It's like the child is, you know, there's a mirror and he's playing with his reflection in the mirror. So is there anything wrong? No, because it's the same person. So the thing is the Lord and his energies are non-different. So is the Lord interacting with them? He's interacting with himself. So what's the problem? Is that what someone said?
Yeah.
What the unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Lord says is all true and is independent of any consideration of unwholesome pros and cons. There is, however, the element of mystery in their verbal controversies. Those whose judgment is made of mundane stuff, being unable to enter into the spirit of the all-loving controversies among pure devotees, due to their own want of unalloyed devotion, are apt to impute to the devotees their own defects of partisanship and opposing views. So even if there is a difference of opinion, it's still all absolute. Does that make sense? So in other words, you have an opinion that Krishna should be with Radharani. It is correct. The same time, as Krishna said, as you surrender, he'll reciprocate. Therefore, other gopis are surrendering. There'll be that natural reciprocation with Krishna. So it's not wrong. And on the absolute platform, it's correct. But it's still, the point is we want to see Krishna with Radharani, not with others. Because Radharani, being the Surup Shakti, she can only please Krishna fully. Others, being her expansion, can only deal with a part of it. So in other words, if you have the complete energy assisted by her expansions, so then you have that complete with all these additional elements. But if you only have Krishna with expansions, they will never come up to that of the whole energy. So in other words, it will be nice, but it won't be as good as if he's with Radharani. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Radharani being the complete.
We're trying to establish
why there may be a controversy where there's different views, but they're both absolute. They're both transcendental. They're not like here, where there's a right and a wrong. They're both right, but then Radharani's camp is more right. That's all. Make sense? Okay. Okay. R- Right, so that's what he's saying. What the unalloyed devotee of the Supreme Lord says is all true and is independent of any consideration of unwholesome pros and cons. So the material consideration of duality doesn't even come into consideration. But, he says, there is an element of mystery in their verbal controversies. There's an element of mystery because there is a difference, and because of the personalities and all the evidence, there's some mysterious element there. Something that one personality can bring out that another one would see from a different angle. But it's perfect. So what he's pointing out here is those on a lesser platform, what they're bringing out is not at all, has any value. So in other words, what Jiva Goswami says, you know, being our apostle, then there's not a problem. So we have the six apostles. And we have an advantage, then they're apostles of Lord Chaitanya, who is a devotee and is God. So we don't have any problem with this. Well, how divine is he? Okay. So we're cool. The more the eye of devotion is tinged with the salve of love, the more will the transcendental concept gradually manifest itself. So there is no need of further hypothetical speculation, which does not improve one's spiritual appreciation, as the substantive knowledge of Goloka is an inconceivable entity. Okay, so it's only by revelation. To try to pursue the inconceivable by the conceptual process is like pounding the empty husk of grain, which is sure to have a fruitless ending. But if you have a husk of a grain and you pound it, you can pound it all day, you'll not get a fruit. It's just the way it is. So that's why intellectually approaching these processes won't work. It is therefore one's bounden duty, by refraining from from the endeavor to know, to try to gain the experience of the transcendental by the practice of pure devotion. Brahma Samhita 537 purport, right? So that's the point, is that the endeavor to know won't work, but the endeavor to practice transcendental devotional service, which will give that revelation, that's what will work. Does that make sense? So the point is you're going to have these convergences of all these different elements, and they intellectually cannot be understood, because the difficulty is the perspectives. Because, I mean, even here, you're talking about, we can see that what each acharya is saying is correct because of the tattvas are all correct. But in rasa, they're taking different flavors. So for our group, there's not a problem, but you might find with others. But even then, it's not a problem, because like Ramanuja, they're worshipping the Lord Vaikuntha. So it doesn't matter if there's a slight difference in perspective. You know, Madhva. Or the others are looking at the pastimes of Radha and Krishna without separation. So then it's fine. The view is fine, because that's their goal. But for our particular, our acharyas give. Does that make sense? So you don't have these difficulties. And then, like this, as you see here, is that he's comparing it, how he's using it, is he's saying in Gokula that he does have, they are wives of someone else, they're dealt with now, but in Goloka they're not. So all he does is shift the attention over there. And so then you'll go, oh, okay, so they're not. It's only manifest here that then the internal potency makes that arrangement. You understand? But he's not saying that they don't have husbands here. He's just saying there they don't. But he doesn't bring out the element that they still think they do, because they did here. Because it's from here you go to Golok. So your position in Braj is established here in Gokul, not in Golok. It's not that you walk into Goloka and then, you know, because Vishwanath makes the point. If you walked into Goloka and they ask you, where are you from? Who are your parents, right? Because you have a village. In the village, everybody has a, you know, within Braj, you have all these small villages, you know, like Uchagram, that's where Lalita's from. You know, it's like that. I think Tungavidya is just when you go past Dangati. you know, and around the corner, I think that's Tunga Vidya's place. So you can say where you're from, who your parents are. You can tell your relatives and everything like that. That's how people want to know. You know, it's just like you say, okay, where are you from? Oh, you're from America. And then they'll say, which place? Mm-hmm. Right? And so then once you say, you know, this place there, then it's, yeah, they visited there, or they have relatives there, or, you know, who's from there? You know, like that, Tallahassee. That's next to Timbuktu, right? Yeah, so like that. So the point is they, you don't have that in Goloka, because it's there in Gokula. It's already established there, because you have the birth pastimes there. You don't have them in Goloka. So therefore, all it is he shifted the focus. You understand? But you have to know that they're one place. But at the same time, as then in this case, because of immaturity, you make that distinction. So that's the difficulty with these kind of questions, is people can't understand the place. Just like we were saying, the jiva issue. People are fighting over, you can't fall from Goloka because jiva says so. You know, it's correct. But then Prabhupada said, no, we fell from the spiritual world, from Krishna's pastimes. But then, what's the point? Is both parties are thinking, it can't be here. It has to be Goloka. So the one is, it can't be Goloka, so then that just leaves you Brahman. You understand how it works? So both parties don't actually understand the non-difference of Gokul and how you say, and the Boma Lila. They can't tell the difference. Because the terms are used interchangeably. Both are called Gokul. You know, here it says, on earth. You know, so all these things are used because they understand the context of what they're talking, so you can tell whether you're talking there or here. And so to say, no, no, but that'll be higher. But if that's higher, why are all the pastimes in Bhagavatam the one from here? Because they're not different. The whole point is that's the entrance. You know, and you can say, well, there can be no envy and all that in Goloka. You know, there won't be. But there can be in Gokul. So why can't you fall from that? You can't fall from prema, but what does tatasta mean? It doesn't mean prema. If we say you can see both the spiritual and the material, what does that mean? If you're in prema, what do you see? Spiritual, material? Only spiritual.
Yeah.
So they're not even connecting the dots of the philosophy. They're coming up with their own idea of what it is, and therefore they're arguing over these points, and then coming up with, I don't know, one book has 50 chapters like that. You know, and then what is it making to come? The leaves, even a leaf doesn't fall in Vaikuntha. But in Krishna's pastimes, as soon as Krishna leaves the forest and goes into Nandagaon, and it's closed and that's it, the trees are so much in separation, all their leaves fall off. What do you mean one leaf doesn't fall? Where are they coming from? What planet are they on? And they're claiming that they're discussing the acharyas? Do you understand? So this is the problem, is that they're trying to understand, they're trying to beat this grain of husk. But of the two parties, Prabhupada said, we fell from the spiritual world, so those trying to support that, even though their job of supporting it isn't that great, still they're in a better position than those who are opposing. So if the point is you can't understand by the mundane intelligence. It's not going to work. It has to be seen that the acharyas have said it, so this is how it works. And there's no contradiction in the acharyas, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says. Therefore, then, what is this? The problem is the one group who makes the strongest stand is not. It does not follow in the line of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They actually follow in the line of caste Goswamis. Scholarly, but caste Goswamis. So they're not going to accept this line anyway. So that's their position. And others that they argue this, it's Bhaktisiddhanta, we fell from Brahman. What is Brahman? It's in between. It's spiritual. Right? They don't take Brahman as the spiritual platform on which everything is based. And then from that Brahman, you can either go into the pastimes in love or into the material world in lust. You understand? So they take as Brahman just being Brahmajyoti and floating around there like that, we fell out of there. Brahman means the neutral platform. That's the Tathasta Shakti. Does this make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. And if they don't understand it, don't bother. It's one of those, you know. And if it's life or death, then, you know, what to do. If they're going to base their Krishna consciousness on this point, then, you know, what's this is wrangling. Vrindavan's about pure love. It's not about logical wrangling, right? So then, why bother? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's allusion to the salve of love in the preceding paragraph is no coincidence. In fact, anticipates the very next shloka of Brahma Samhita, which states the qualification required to receive the Lord at all, perceive the Lord at all. Not to speak of receive darshan and his most confidential pastimes. Right? So just that you accept that there is a supreme, that's one level. Then to understand the Bhagavan aspect, all these different things like that. The salve of love. Text 38. Premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shama sundaram achintya gunaswarupam govindamaripurisham tamahang vichami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, a beautiful dark complexion filled with inconceivable qualities, whom the devotees constantly see in their mind during samadhi, permeated with prema. That last one was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's. These are all Banu Maharaj's. It's different like that. So then I have not been able to bring up the point that I would rather use as the original. And then like this, to bring out other aspects. See, because what he's doing, Banu Maharaj, is then from the commentary of Jiva Goswami explains each word. So based on that, then he puts it together as a translation. But now, why would that be in the commentary?
Maybe it's a alternative.
No, so it means it's in the commentary like that because he's bringing out the points that are made. So therefore, you use Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, and then to bring out other aspects of it, then you use this method. So we'll get him to adjust that. So just like we see in the last one, then he did it how I would recommend. Like that. It means, in other words, if it adds something, then you bring it out. Because one of them you saw was only one sentence. Right? So that means is that that was the only aspect that needed to be brought out. Like that. Okay. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda of dark, beautiful complexion, filled with inconceivable qualities, whom the devotees constantly see in their mind during samadhi, permeated with prema. Here, Jiva Goswami explains that seeing the Lord is not a matter of mundane vision, which depends on physical proximity. Quote, though Govinda lives in Goloka, he is also available in other places. The devotees see that form of inconceivable qualities, achinti gunasurupam, by eyes covered with the ointment of prema, premanjana churita, during samadhi, bhakti vilochena. With eyes, they see that form in their minds, hridayeshu. So that's how he'll explain. It's one of the typical ways as you bring out, so it's very clear, because a word can have so many different derivatives in how you put it together. So then the acharyas bring out that this is the angle that you want to take. Then you'll get the understanding.
And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he also based his Sandeep Darshan?
It will be, but it's also, you know, in other words, he's bringing out all the aspects, you know, like there, and Jiva Goswami is bringing out, you know, specifics how to approach it. The difference is that Jiva Goswami, in writing that, now if you're reading Brahma Samhita, then there's generally a point is you know Sanskrit, so you'll get that whole aspect, and then you'll get the specific angle to approach that aspect. So we don't know. So then you have the combination of taking from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, like that. So he's given. So then that will be taking from that. Does that make sense? So we'll use. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur similarly explains the limitation of our material eyes. The Shyamasundara form of Krishna is his inconceivable simultaneous personal and impersonal self-contradictory form. So it's both personal and impersonal at once, because he is a person that he's in one place and the devotees can interact with him. At the same time, in that form, he's all-pervading, but as one person, all-pervading. At the same time, he's pervading everything as his effulgence. So that means all three are functioning at once. And all of them are contradictory of the other. How can you be in one place and be everywhere in the same form? At the same time, as how can you be both personal and impersonal? So that's Krishna. That's what he can do.
Well, we see it in the past time saying, for example, in Dwaraka, he's always personal. He's never impersonal, even if he's with so many wives.
Because in the spiritual world, the impersonal and the Paramatma feature don't have to be manifest.
So in spiritual world, he's always personal.
It's always Bhagavan.
But here, he has three features.
Yeah, the three features are here. Means it'll be noticed. That's what Prabhupada mentions, that the Brahman and Paramatma features are due to the mundane conception. It's the real, but you would only worry about them if you're in the mundane sphere.
Yeah.
If you're in the spiritual world in a relationship with Krishna, why would you function in anything else other than him as a person? It's just like, okay, the man at the office, you know, people know him at the office and that, but if you know him as a friend, why would you want to have a relationship with him like he does with people at the office? Right? And then there's people that never seen him. They just know that it's his company. He pervades everything, how things are done, you know, just the way it's set up, the different work ethic or whatever it is. So he's pervading the whole thing. So if you know him personally, why would you be based on the other? So it already includes. That's the whole point. So the personal already includes the other two, because it's the basis of the other two. Therefore, it's not a perception that anybody uses. But in the material world, it's used, because then by using it, we go from a material form into Brahman, into the controller of you know, what we see, into the person. Because otherwise, how is it all? It's all based on Brahman. Then how is it controlled? As Paramatma. Why is it controlled? Because it's his will. Well, so it's his, who's his? That's him as Bhagavan. So we're trying to reverse the process and take it back. So,
the true devotees see that form in their purified hearts under the influence of devotional trance. The form of Shyama is not the blue color visible in the mundane world, but is the transcendental variegated color afforded eternal bliss. It is not visible to the mortal eye. So it's a unique, you know, blue, like that. So in other words, the color of eternal bliss, unlimited eternal bliss, is this color. Because rasa means color, so everything. So he is the ocean of rasa. All rasa comes from him. So that color of that combined all rasa is this shyama color.
So it's not a material color.
No. But you get closer. That one Brajbasi painting, you don't see it. So devotees have done their interpretation of it. But they don't use the same color. But in that color, Prabhupada said, this is the color.
Which one?
The Brajbasi print of Krishna playing on the flute with Radharani offering flowers at his feet. It's a very specific color. And if you understand, you see that's the color you see in the monsoon cloud. So that's the close. But still, there'll be that brightness, all these other things that you won't get here. Mm-hmm. But it's like that, so it's different. It's not sky blue. But sky blue works over here. When Krishna manifests himself in Braja, both the devotees and non-devotees saw him with this very eye, but only the devotees cherished him eternally present in Braja as the priceless jewel of their heart. But everybody could see his form, but only the devotees would appreciate that this is the Lord of their life. Others, he's just some guy, right? You saw that, you know, when he came into the wrestling, some thought he was just some, they're just a bunch of inept kids. Like that, you know, so they didn't see that here's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or here's the, you know, the most wonderful person, or any of these things. So they didn't quite catch that. Nowadays, also, the devotees see him in Braja in their hearts, saturated with devotion, although they do not see him with their eyes. Right? The eye of devotion is nothing but the eye of the pure, unalloyed spiritual self of the jiva. Right? So the eye of devotion means the jiva himself is actually able to see. Right? The form of Krishna is visible to that eye in proportion to his purification by the practice of devotion. So that's what we're saying. These inconceivable elements, as the devotion develops, then one can see. But to try to do it with one's own eye will never happen.
So when devotees are interested in some kind of mystical revelations and all that, it's totally mundane.
Basically, yes. You know, so it depends upon who they are. If they're Russian, you can tell it to them to their face. If they're not Russian, be a little careful.
They might understand.
Yeah. No. The Russians, you tell them that, they just laugh. But it's basically the approach will be also like, you know, their Purva Samskar religion. Because in, let's say, as you go farther east, the Christianity gets into mystical. You know, you come into the East Bloc, then it's more sentimental. Then you go into the West, then it's, I'm not sure. I never looked at that so carefully. But it's a lot of rules and regulations, a lot of burning at the stake, a lot of absolute, clean, pure, squeaky, you know, like that kind of, you know, absolute, you know, all or nothing. And then you keep going west and then you hit Hollywood. So, you know, so like that. And you have these varieties of religious views. When the devotion of the neophyte reaches the stage of bhava bhakti, the pure eye of that devotee is tinged with the salve of love by the grace of Krishna, which enables him to see Krishna face to face. Right? So that means bhava bhakti. So that's the difference. The bhava bhakti means it's in the neutral state, but positive towards Krishna. That's Brahma Bhuta. But if you're just on the liberated platform, that's not Brahma-Bhuta. So there is no tinge of the salve of love. Because if there's that tinge of salve of love, generally speaking, one doesn't fall from there. And if we see that the those on the platform of Baba fall, what do they fall to? Example being Bharat Maharaj. Right? They're still the same consciousness in that, just they're here instead of there. Does that make sense? So if you're here and you're here, that means you couldn't have had the salve of love. Otherwise, why would that be forgotten? So in other words, neutral and one bought lock, stock, and barrel, the material system. That makes sense. Yes? No?
Yes.
Okay.
How do we know if a sentiment is mundane?
Is it approved by the acharyas? That's okay. The sum and substance of the shloka is that the form of Krishna, who is Shyamasundara, Natavara, best dancer, Murlalidhara, holder of the flute, and Tribhanga, triple bending, is not a mental concoction but is transcendental, and is visible with the eye of the soul of the devotee under trance. Brahma Samhita 5:38 purport. text 39. The Lord's expansions. Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtanda Navatara Makarod Bhuvaneshukintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramahumanyo Govinda Madhi Purusham Kamahankajami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, though appearing in the worlds in eternal forms such as Rama and Nisringa, with their characteristic powers, also appears personally in the supreme form of Krishna with the most attractive pastimes. The Govinda prayers follow the same overall pattern as verses 1 through 28, from the description of the subtle spiritual plane working down gradually to the gross material realm. So far, we have heard about Govinda, his beautiful form and conceivable qualities, and sublime pastimes, as well as the transcendental qualifications required to experience. Now we have Govinda's avatars, his sojourns into the uniquadrantal corner of creation. Quote, sometimes Govinda also appears in the material world through one of his expansions. That is expressed in this verse, Dikdarshini Tika 5:39. Although this verse is about all the avatars, special mention are of the Paravasta forms who originate from beyond the Paravyoma, the realm beyond the Viraja. Quote, his subjective portions, such as the avatars, namely Rama, etc., appear from Vaikuntha, and his own form, Krishna, manifests himself with Raja in this world from Goloka. The underlying sense is that Krishna Chaitanya, identical with Krishna himself, also brings about by his appearance the direct manifestation of Godhead himself. Rama Samhita 5:39 purport. The above mentioned descents are the most human in character, exhibiting superior degrees of sweetness to the Avesha forms. So then you're going to have these varieties of expansions like we discussed, Rupa Goswami discussed before. And so then you're going to have those that are based on the human pastimes, so those are always the more attractive ones. When he's more as the Supreme Lord, then there's less. Like that. It means it has its specialness, but it's the maximum elements are brought out in the human pastimes. So those are always. So all these come from that side. Then you have those who are expanding from Mahavishnu, right? Through Garbhadaksha, through Kiradaksha. Then you have those that come from that side, like these Paravasta, they come from the other side of Viraja. They don't come from the uniquadrantal, they come from the triquadrantal. Right, so Krishna comes from Braja and then manifests those pastimes here. Rama comes from Ayodhya and then there's an Ayodhya here.
And who's coming from the uniquadrantal, except for Purusha avatar?
It means the Purusha avatars are there, but let's say like Hayagriva. Right, so they're manifesting it because the point is Mahavishnu is, you know, is Sankarshan. Right? So you have all the different activities and qualities, but they're only showing a little bit, and then these are showing even less. While Krishna is manifesting full potencies, and Rama, Nisringa will manifest full but a touch less. Right, but these ones are because they're portions of plenary portions. These are directly the original personality of Godhead himself. So it's just a matter of how much potencies manifest. Does that make sense? That's all. You know, it's not that they can't do like we see is Lord Chaitanya manifests these others, you know, for different devotees. He takes on the form of the Shringa or this like that. He just has for some fun. But it's just a matter of because they're all within his personality. It's just that they have a particular place. So, okay. Text 40. Brahman, the boundary wall of Vaikuntha. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose powerful form radiates an effulgence known as the undifferentiated, unlimited, all-encompassing Brahman, which is completely distinct from its powers displayed in unlimited planets throughout billions of universes. Until now, Brahma's prayers have concerned themselves mostly with Bhagavan realization of the Lord. This verse and the next, on the other hand, deal with his Brahman aspect. We learn how Brahman, the cherished goal of the jnanis, is but a mere extension of Krishna's personal magnificence. The mundane universe, created by Maya, is one of the infinite eternal manifestations accommodating space, time, and gross things. The impersonal aspect of Godhead, the non-differentiated Brahman, is far above this principle of mundane creation. But even the non-differentiated Brahman is only the external effulgence emanating from the boundary wall of the transcendental realm of Vaikuntha, displaying the tri-quadrantal glory of Govinda. Brahma Samhita 540 purport. Jiva Goswami here explains how the words dharma and dharmi are derived from these personal and impersonal archetypes. Though personal and impersonal aspects are actually only one form, by a manifestation of the Lord with qualities, the form called Govinda, who is the possessor of various attributes, dharmi, appears. By a manifestation of the Lord devoid of qualities, his form as his attribute, dharma, called Brahman, appears. This Brahman is like the halo around the moon. Digdarshani Tika 540. Remember before we were saying is that power of Brahman is there. Brahman is there, and so in Brahman the material energy is then getting that power by which all these things can be manifest, just like the earth is there and you plant seeds and then it comes up all this variety, but it's still just earth. Right? So it's all Brahman, but it's the transformation of his energies, not of Brahman itself. Right? Right, so that Shakti Parinam. And so then here is pointing, he's Dharmi, or the source of Dharma, and then the Brahman is Dharma. So it establishes the nature of everything. So it is. Because Brahman being the effulgence of his qualities, so then that means what is the nature of that quality? That's the Dharma. But those qualities come from our Krishna's qualities, so he's the Dharmi.
He's the origin of the
quality. Yes, he's the origin. Avatari. Yes, the Avatari. You know, so he's the Dharmi. He's the origin of Dharma. So all his qualities then, so therefore then his energies then in the spiritual realm are manifesting the forms and activities that manifest those qualities in rasa. Right? Means in the transcendental rasa. Now, in the material world, those energies transform and manifest the forms and activities that manifest the rasa and connection, mundane rasa in connection with those qualities. Understand? So therefore, that's why Brahman is then separate from the material world, because the material world means that it is the transformation of his energy into what we see here. So therefore, he's still beyond this, is still transcendental to this. But all this is still based on him. Right? Just like the earth is separate from all the potatoes sitting in the pile in your kitchen. But at the same time, it's just the source of, and it couldn't function without. So the potato is just the transformation of that potency of Brahman, of the earth. Never thought about that. Did you? Potatoes are Brahman. Mm-hmm.
Potatoes is the earth.
Mm-hmm. Potatoes is here, yeah.
But can we say then that Brahman is everywhere, in both Ekapada and tree, whatever?
Yes.
And it's also where Mahavishnu lies, and it's also inside the universes.
Everything is Brahman, but there's different qualities of Brahman.
Also superior
and inferior? It means in other words, the jiva is also Brahman. Because if everything is Krishna, we're also Brahman. But we have a particular uniqueness in the qualities of this aspect of Brahman. Material energy also. So Krishna himself as the supreme Brahman only interacts with his internal potency Brahman. And jivas only with his internal potency Brahman. And we can connect ourselves with that internal potency and therefore be interactive with Krishna. If we connect ourselves with the external,
then it doesn't work out so good. Then we're not, Krishna doesn't interact with us as Bhagavan, only as Brahman and Parama.
So we can say that when we offer prayers, for example, for the deities,
then we're dealing with Bhagavan, and we, the soul, are offering those prayers. You know, if we throw in a Mercedes Benz or something, Benzes like that, then, you know, it has that conditioning element to it. But if we avoid that, we stick to pure devotion, then it works out.
So Brahman is not space, actually. It's more...
No, space means space comes from the all-accommodating potency. That's a potency of Sesha. You know, so in other words, it goes back to Balaram. You know, so it's his energies expand as the Dham and the accommodation of the Dham. Is that something? You know, so that the ability to put things together and the ability to accommodate. So you can put it together, you can take it apart. Like, because the spiritual world is not put together, it's not taken apart. So, you know, so something sense. So that element, these things there, the combination of the spiritual potencies and the accommodation of it. Does that make sense?
Okay. Considering Lord Brahma's position in the universe, his bold statement here that Brahman originates from Krishna and not vice versa deals a heavy blow to Mayavada philosophy. Should anyone dare to dispute the authenticity or veracity of this text, Jiva Goswami has no shortage of scriptural quotations which corroborate its conclusions. Right. In other words, nobody goes near Jiva Goswami. Because he's got however many quotes you have, he has more. In the 11th canto, the Lord enumerates his powers. I am form, taste, aroma, touch, and sound. False ego, the Mahatattva, earth, water, fire, air, and sky. The living entity, material nature, the modes of nature, passion, and ignorance. The modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. And the impersonal Brahman, Param. All these items, along with knowledge of their individual symptoms, and the steady conviction that results from this knowledge, represent me. Right? Because the knowledge of the individual symptoms, so that's Dharma. Right? No. From the previous quote, is that the Lord, devoid of qualities, his form as his attribute, Dharma, called Brahman, appears. So all these items, along with knowledge of the individual symptoms, that's Dharma. So you can have the material jnana shakti from the mode of goodness, or we can have the transcendental, so we see them in relation to Krishna. So otherwise, we can see them only up to the level of goodness, or we can see them beyond into the position of transcendence. Matsya as well speaks of the impersonal aspect of the Lord in the 8th canto. You will be thoroughly advised and favored by me, and because of your inquiries, everything about my glory, known as impersonal Brahman, will manifest within your heart. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:24-38. Those with particular inquiries consult the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Enough has been said here. Dikdarshani Tika 5:40. So in other words, we don't have to work. So this is an introduction to this level of discussion, which will be coming after 4 years.
The Sandarbhas?
Yes. We'll start the Sandarbhas. After 3 years, we'll start the Vedanta Sutras. So don't worry. Unless we do it the other way around, do the Sandarbhas and the Vedanta, so then we'll appreciate what Vedanta is saying. I'll work it out. 41. And you thought it was. Okay. But the point is the more you know, then that'll start to be nice.
Yeah.
Waiting for that moment.
Yes, okay, yes. 41. Krishna's relationship to the modes.
I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose material energy, Maya, consisting of the three gunas described elaborately in the Vedas, produces hundreds of universes, while he himself is pure sattva, Vishuddha sattva, which is the cause of the material sattva, which manifests his blissful form. But he himself is pure sattva, which manifests his blissful form. Right? But that's Vishuddha sattva is the cause of the material sattva. The previous verse represents how jnanis become perpetually entangled or perpetually tangled in material existence, even if they are so fortunate as to reach that state. After enjoying Brahmananda, they must fall back into the cycle of birth and death under the grip of the modes of material nature. This series of verses thus explains how Krishna is the source of all pleasure to all, whether bhakta, jnani, or the karmi. Jiva Goswami further elaborates on this verse. Having shown the glories of Govinda's form, Brahma now shows Govinda's glory in relation to the universe in this verse and the next. This verse shows that the external energy, Maya, creates inconceivable effects within the universe and then explains that the Lord is not affected by his energy of Maya. Beyond this, the sattva, which is mixed with Rajas and Tamas, is Shuddha sattva or Parasattva. But purer than that is Vishuddha sattva, functioning by the Lord's Chit Shakti. This is explained in the Vishnu Purana. The material gunas of sattva, rajas and tamas, do not exist in the Lord. May that person, the source of all, purer than the purest, be pleased with me. In you, who are the shelter of all spiritual qualities, exist the energies of Ladini, Sandini, and Samvit. In you who are devoid of material qualities, the mixture of happiness and distress found in the material world does not exist. Further details are given in the Bhagavad Sandarbha, Dikdarshini Tika 541.
It means there must be very detailed discussion. So he's only bringing in the basic elements here. So the Lord, he functions to be Shuddha Sattva. Then you have the transcendental platform of Sattva, which means you could say the Brahman platform. Then you have Sattva here. Does that make sense? So in other words, I'm making a distinction here, because generally we only deal with Vishuddha Sattva, meaning that there's that and then there's the goodness. So goodness and pure goodness. But within the pure goodness, basically you have two levels. That level which is the Lord's chit potency, which is connected with his pastimes, and that which is just pure goodness. Right? So when the living entities are in that element of Vishuddha Sattva, then we're talking about they're just on the platform of Brahman. Right? When they're in the Mahatattva. Right? Now when we're talking about the devotees, then in Vishuddha Sattva, then we're talking about that platform of engagement with the Lord. Right? I think also this is known as Vasudeva Sattva.
So can we say that Shuddha Sattva is spiritual and Vishuddha Sattva is transcendental?
Yeah, I mean from when he's dividing like this, but you see is there's the general definition, which much of the time only works with two, and then there's the getting more specific, then you have three. Because in other words, there's the connection. That second one has that connection to both. It'll have, just like Vairaja, is the gross form of the subtle, which then Brahma, as the third form of Brahma, will manifest. Right? But you can just say that there's, Hiranyagarbha and Vairaja, because Brahma is just the gross form that will manifest that. Right, or you can, you understand. So you can deal with two, or you can deal with three. So you can say sattva, shuddha sattva, vishuddha sattva, or you can just say sattva and vishuddha sattva, or sattva and shuddha sattva. Because the shuddha sattva, if we're talking that, we're talking about what's beyond sattva, then that would include both those aspects, the transcendental position, and then the transcendental pastime. Does that make sense? So a distinction can be made. If you're dealing with devotees, you don't need to make the distinction. But when you're dealing with those who are not devotees, but who are transcendental to the material world, then we'll make that distinction. So in other words, the taste of Brahman is not as much as the taste of the pastimes with the Lord. So that means that Vishuddha Sattva, the taste of that is way beyond Shuddha Sattva. And that's way beyond Sattva. And that's way beyond passion and ignorance. So in other words, there's a few steps to go here.
Can we say that Brahma Bhuta is also pure goodness? One is chit level, one is...
It would be pure goodness, but when we use the term Brahma Bhuta, it generally refers to devotees on the platform of Bhava. So then they would be dealing with that higher level, the Vishuddha Sattva, in connection with the chit potency. But we're distinguishing that from the position of the jiva, where he is simply liberated from the material world, but not in the spiritual world. You know what I'm saying? Then we can see is that you can divide that. If not in the spiritual world means one means he's not situated there, the other one he is situated there. But because being situated there, he's not seeing it as the spiritual world, therefore he's not technically there. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say you take the child, the father takes the child, the small child, down to, you know, where he's going down to the office. So now the activities that the child does, are they any different than at home? No, you have to take the same toys, talk in the same way, deal in the same. So technically, was the child at the office? Not really. So that's where we're making the distinction there, because then you make that distinction is then the jiva can be situated in the spiritual realm, but not be there because they're in the neutral state. So unless they choose to look at it from the perspective of for Krishna's enjoyment, then they enter actually into the spiritual world. You know, in other words, the spiritual world is more of a consciousness than it is a location. But because we always try to position it by location, therefore that's where we get a problem.
Text 42, the bewilderer of the bewilderer. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, by appearing in the minds of the living entities to a small degree and embracing them with Madhurya Rasa, causes them to remember him, and in this way perpetually conquers the worlds by his attractive pastimes. After hearing about how the Lord pervades the universe via the material energy, now we hear of his close kinship to the living entity as Paramatma. Text 42, beginning Ananda Chinmaya Rasat Mataya, gives a clue how the jivas can escape his karmic fetters. The conditioned soul is apt to be enchanted by beauty and bliss. Rather than search outward, casting fragments of it here and there, he can just as easily turn inward for the real thing. Quote, this verse describes the complete bewilderment of this world caused by the Lord's attractive form. Govinda appears to some degree in the minds of the living entities of this world by embracing them with his Madhurya Rasa. He is described as being reflected, pratifalan, since the Lord appears within the tiny jiva as a second form, Paramatma, endowed with part of his all-enchanting nature. This form causes remembrance. In this way, he conquers all persons in the world. The five chapters on Rasa in the Bhagavatam explain his attractive nature. Quote, then Lord Krishna, a smile on his lotus face, appeared before the gopis, wearing a garland and a yellow garment. He directly appeared as one who can bewilder the mind of Cupid. Sakshan, man mataha, who himself bewilders the minds of ordinary people. So he bewilders Cupid, who bewilders everyone else. The meaning of man mataha is similar to the phrase in the Kena Upanishad, chakshu shas chakshu. He inspires the eye to see. Kena Upanishad 1:2. This man mataha can mean that he is the source of whatever bewilderment Cupid can cause by love. The Lord acts as the cause of Cupid's powers of bewilderment through material love. Material Cupid's actions are contaminated, being overcome by material influence. Darshani Tika 5:21. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the simple formula to overcome our attachment for gross things by experiencing the higher taste. Those who constantly recollect in accordance with spiritual instructions, the name, figure, attributes, and pastimes of the form of Krishna appearing in the amorous rasa, whose loveliness vanquishes the god of mundane love, conqueror of all mundane hearts, are alone meditators of Krishna. Krishna, who is full of pastimes, always manifests himself with his realm only in the pure receptive cognition of such persons. Right? So, in other words, those who think of him appropriately, coming from parampara, he manifests within their heart. Otherwise, if it's only intellectual or it's not in parampara, then he won't manifest himself. The pastimes of that divine, manifested divine realm triumphantly dominates in every way all the majesty and beauty of the mundane world. So, Brahma Samhita 542 purport. So everything that we see here, it has its origin there. So, in other words, Krishna's come and he's dealing with the living entity. So, it's that he is the attractor of Cupid, but we're attracted by Cupid. So then if we understand that what we're attracted by is Krishna, it's Krishna who makes attractive Cupid attractive. Then if we deal directly with Krishna, then we're not attracted by this world. But we know how to deal with this world because it's all, he means the Lord's Brahman is pervading it, right? So therefore Dharma is there. So we know how to deal with it on that platform. Because, in other words, why would we deal on that platform? We could say, no, but as devotees we'll deal on the Bhagavan platform. But the point is the Bhagavan element is the pastimes. Right? So we're dealing with here. So why will we deal with something here appropriately? Because that's the Dharma of it. And so if dealing with it on the Dharma of it, that's the Brahman platform. If I understand that that's its potency is coming from Krishna. Right? If I just see it as Dharma, then I'll get the pious result. If I'm seeing it as because Dharma is Krishna, because he is, his Brahman is expanding everywhere. Right? He is the source of that. So all the qualities of Brahman and attainment of those is what Dharma is about. Right? So therefore, I deal with the material energy on the spiritual platform by dealing with it as Brahman. So therefore, because it's Brahman, that's why I deal with it as that. But we have this idea that spiritual means I'm free, I do nothing. It's a hippie concept, not an actual concept. Hippie is if you're free, you follow no rules. No, free means you're not bound by the rules. It's you use the rules to please Krishna. Here it's you don't follow them, you get a bad result. Why? Because you're not using them for Krishna. It's just like this. Let us say you're on one side of the street, you want to get to the other side of the street. Okay, what's the point of the zebra crossing? It's the rule, but what's the actual higher principle? Yes, you can get to the other side. In other words, you want to get to the other side of the road, there's a way to do that. Very comfortably. But people who have a different mentality, then they are not going to follow that. And therefore, that's why there's zebra crossing. Previously, there wasn't zebra crossing because less people got ran over. Right? But now between, you know, the idiots in the cars and the idiots on the sidewalk, then it's, you know, it's increased. So therefore, that's what rules made. So for one, it's just the rule, oh, we have to cross here. But for the other, it's just, you know, this is the place where you can cross, it's safe. Does that make sense? So in other words, you're using it for something else. You're, the dharma of things is being applied to please the dharmi, Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Text 43, Golok Dhamma. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, by whom respective powers are given to the abodes of Durga, Shiva, and Vishnu, which are situated below his own planet of Goloka. Right, so now you're taking Goloka as the whole thing. Right? Text 43. Beginning Goloka Namni indicates a string of verses depicting the various offices behind the maintenance of the cosmic creation. Right? So now we've established Golok Dhamma, right? Then we're going to get into the Panchopasana. All, you know, Durga, Shiva, everybody's position and how they have places. The system of Panchopasana, progressive worship of the primary demigods, Durga, Ganesh, Surya, Shiva, and Vishnu, was appropriated
by Mayavadis and evolved into a type of covered impersonalism. Lord Brahma in this section gives the authoritative attitude in which we should revere these personalities as subordinate agents of Krishna's potency. Everything in the world, we will see, is animated by these diverse personalities, united in service to Govinda's sweet will. Right? So the Mayavadis use it for their work. The Karmis use it for theirs. So in other words, this Panchopasana is used, you know, for mundane development, as opposed to being used for how to connect yourself with Krishna. Right? Brahma begins by giving a spatial breakdown of the totality of existence, placing various personalities in their respective places. The realm of Goloka stands highest above all others. Brahma, looking up to the higher position of Goloka, is speaking of the other realms from the point of view of his own realm. The first in order is this mundane world called Devidam, consisting of the 14 worlds, namely Satyaloka, etc. Next above Devidam is located Shivadam, one portion of which, called Mahakaladam, is enveloped in darkness. In interpenetrating this portion of Shivadam, there shines the Sadashiva Loka, full of great light. Above the same appears Haridama, or the transcendental Vaikuntha Loka. The potency of Devidama in the form of the extension of Maya and that of Shiva Loka, consisting of time, space, and matter, are the potency of the separated particles pervaded by the penumbral reflection of the subjective portion of the divinity. By subjective portion, mean Mahavishnu. But Haridama is ever resplendent with transcendental majesty, and the great splendor of all sweetness promenades over all other majesties in Goloka. The Supreme Lord Govinda, by his own direct and indirect power, has constituted those respective potencies of those realms. Rama Samhita 543 purport. Okay.
This is part of Shiva Loka that's in the darkness. What is that? The center part of
the... That must have the connection with us. You know. Because the point is there's always going to be... You have Devi Dham and you have the Shiva Dham, but you're going to have some connection between them, like that. So that's the aspect of where Krishna has transformed, therefore interacts. The Vishnu never interacts.
That's after Shambhu. Shambhu is
Shambhu is, but there's the element where he is Vishnu, but there's also the transformed aspect. Like that. So then you're getting these two aspects.